Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Toy department time, boys and girls. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. Playing hurt today, Kolsky.
Yeah, so you're telling me.
Got a little tummy ache.
I do. That may have sounded callous just now, but I feel for you because I hate a stomach ailment. I'm just, nothing's worse. I hate it.
You just feel all gross and weird, right?
Yep. Like, I hate that. I hate feeling nauseous. It's the worst feeling in the world.
And it's weird because, like, obviously your appetite for food is drastically reduced, but it somehow, like, decreases your appetite for everything. You know what I mean? You're just not up for stuff when you have a stomach ache.
Totally.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's me. So you got that to look forward to today. Sounds like we got a banner show still ahead.
Yeah, you sound fired up and excited. But talking TV.
We actually do have a lot of stuff to talk about. And I would say, at least for me, I don't know how you felt, there were some things I loved this week and some things that I truly despised. So that's always fun to be on both okay. sides of that coin. Where would you like to start of all the things? Because we got a lot of things. That doesn't really matter what order we take them to me.
Sorry. What are you saying?
I said, where do you want to start? What's the thing you most want to talk about?
The thing I most want to talk about. It's hard to say that without knowing what you're going to think about things. But I'm going to go with something I'm pretty sure you liked. And also, I'm guessing the thing we both watched the longest ago at this point, and that's the Challenge finale.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It kind of has been a minute because I think we've both been watching the Challenge like the almost the day it comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Not sooner. And I feel like we obviously we've spoken a little bit on the show already about our love for the Challenge, but just what a top-notch season of entertainment with a top-notch finale. I don't understand how, I believe this is the 34th season. I don't understand how they're making the show better. But they are.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly haven't watched all 34, but I've watched a few. And look, overall, the season was really good, maybe better than others. But the last two episodes of this finale is just some of the most incredible reality television entertainment I've ever seen. It was, there were twists and turns, there were upsets. The whole thing was awesome. It was just awesome. And
I mean, you
Turbo.
Yes. you have a finale. I mean, the finale is always hard. It's always grueling. It's always long. It's always multiple episodes. I don't recall a finale where basically just about everyone quit. Right. I mean, you know, obviously they eliminated a few people, but people just keeled over and quit, you know.
Here's
and
how you know.
DJ didn't even give him guff. Right.
Exactly. Here's how you know it was the hardest thing ever. People quit. And TJ was like, nice try.
Yeah.
TJ hates quitters more than anything in the world. But even TJ had to admit that at a certain point on this finale, quitting was a matter of life and death.
Yeah. And it seemed like almost everyone who quit was like literally like, I physically cannot continue, you know?
Yeah. I'm injured or hurt. Quitting, but they were, those people were laid to rest by the Challenge finale. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And I
can't think of another reality show that does that. I mean, like, you know, American Ninja Warrior is tough. You know what I mean? And I'm sure really hard or whatever, but like,
yeah. And like Survivor and Naked and Afraid do stuff in the wilderness that's really scary or difficult. But just in terms of just physically pushing people to their actual limit. I've never seen it, yeah. And it was awesome.
Like, the number of times where, like, people thought, like, I've gotten to the finish line.
I think the most incredible part of the entire two-episode finale was when, I believe it was Theo, and he's, like, the third person at this point, comes running down that sand dune and raises his arms, and they played the music, like, dun, 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 dun. And then it just, like, as he got down and realized it wasn't over, the music was just like, and it's like, we, as viewers, already knew, like, it was not a surprise to us, it was not a surprise to the producers or the music organizers, but it was just such an incredible music cue, and watching his face sink as he realized he's about to get back in the damn pain locker.
Yep.
And I mean, it was so gruesome. I almost feel bad laughing at these people, except that they signed up for this and were handsomely rewarded.
Yeah, and did it for our entertainment. You know, like,
exactly,
they knew.
Exactly. It's the best.
To somebody, right, either a bunch of you, I'm guessing, who are listening to this and maybe haven't watched the show, and if you say to someone, like, well, they have this pain locker, and it's like this, you know, apocalyptic-looking truck that looks like they stole out of the Mad Max set, and they just sit people in the back and drive people. Like, it sounds stupid, but when you watch them in there, and they're, like, trying to get, like, 45 minutes of sleep, and they're, like, huddled up in these little blankets and just
and Cara Marie is refusing the IV like a doofus. I mean, the fact that she did that after refusing the IV is pretty remarkable, even though she didn't quite make it.
And this is a woman who has been in, I don't know how many finals, but it's got to be 6-7 if not more. And for her to be like, this is the most grueling final ever. That to me was like you could see it, but then you really knew it. You know what I mean?
And I was rooting for Theo by the end of it. I thought he was going to pull it out.
Really?
But yeah, I like, in many ways, Theo was kind of a nothing for much of the season.
Yeah. I never really connected with Theo.
Yeah. I'm not sure I did either, but just as it went on, I was like, this guy kind of has, like athletically, like, he's kind of built for this, and he's doing a pretty incredible job. His math wasn't great, but, and I think that's what screwed him ultimately.
That was the difference, really.
Yeah, but
how did Turbo do the math? I actually need to go back and watch that.
Amazing. I can't believe Turbo did the math. I love Wes's strategy of just, like, I cannot run or, like, do anything physically with these people. I'm just going to catch them with my brain.
Yeah.
And it almost worked.
He was like LeBron playing defense, right? You know what I mean? Yeah,
no, he was late stage Kobe, basically.
Yeah. I'm going to run around way less, but I'm smarter than you guys, and I'll be there when you need me, you know?
Yes. And I can still go for 60, my guy.
Yeah. we've said it before, but a really command performance from Wes all season.
All season long, man. All you need from that character, if we're talking about this as a TV show, all you need from that character is to make the final, right? He doesn't have to win. As long as he is on the TV for every moment of the series, it's a win.
Although I was definitely rooting for him to win.
Sure. I would have loved if he had won. By the end, I would have been happy for anybody but Ninja Natalie to win. She really started to get on my nerves.
Oh, really?
She has some emotional control issues that I'm not totally on board with. But if Cara Maria had won, Theo, Wes, and Turbo was a delight, man. He was probably the leader in unintentional comedy, right? Over the course of the series.
100%. The thing is, on paper, he seemed, and like when they first introduced him, I'm like, oh man, this is not
right. It's like, why do we need this guy? He could barely speak English, and he doesn't seem funny.
He was incredible, hilarious. You know, like, has his own way of doing things. Genuinely seemed to be like a pretty good person.
Yes, seems to be one of the better people on the show and just like clueless enough to maintain being a decent guy while all this shenanigans is running around him. Yeah.
And had
you know
this,
what I mean?
He just had this really weird ability too to like turn a phrase every now and again. You know?
Yes.
There was something about how he was going to be like a Lian.
Yes.
That was like, what a
his Lian thing, it reminded me of Monte Ellis. I'm a Warriors. I'm always going to be a Warriors. It was like, I come in as a Lion. I want to leave as a Lion. Yeah. Like, he's waiting for dudes.
Yeah.
To, like, give him an assist.
Yeah, like, help. He was helping everyone. Like, it's amazing.
He was a superstar, and then at the end, Wes is like, please, the challenge, don't bring Turbo back, and it's like, oh, Turbo's coming back, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Turbo's coming back, don't you kid yourself.
We said all these things about him, we also left off the fact that he's basically a superhuman competitor, like.
Yeah, although I was shocked by his endurance, ultimately, because that was sort of the knock on him throughout the season, was he's all ripped up and can't go for the long haul, but man, yeah, he's a beast. He's literally a beast.
Yeah, like that. You know, there was that scene in the, I think it was the first part of the finale, where he like ate like a whole big plate of food and then got on the treadmill to like practice that.
Yeah.
Which of course
that was incredible.
Turned out to be necessary.
and then afterward he's like, so now I know I can eat much food and run. And you're like, yes, Turbo, that is what we've discovered.
Yeah, there's something there's a little Schwarzenegger there. Like, I don't know, just what a great, you know, you want to say character, but he's really mostly being himself, I'm assuming.
That's actually a great comp, I think, Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Arnold Schwarzenegger was funny a lot. And he must at some level have known what was going on. But part of what was so funny about him was that a lot of times it seemed like he didn't totally get it.
Nope. It was just, I don't know. This season was endless enjoyment. I'm so glad like they found so many good new people. You know what I mean? Where this thing can go for a really long time.
I mean, you've got, they filled some hot. This was like the 2000. What is it? 3 NBA draft.
Yeah.
For real, because
stars coming into the league, generational talent.
Exactly, and like you just see it, like Bear. Come on, like that guy. He may never make it past week 4, but that guy's coming on the challenge over and over again.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, and he will be stirring up the pot. There were a lot of really good pod stirrers, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, just a phenomenal run. I'm excited for if you told me there was another season of the challenge coming out tomorrow, I would be pumped. So
I almost think that's the next step here.
It's just year round competition.
I mean, you take a couple weeks off, but like if they're building out the roster this big, you could even do like round robin-y sorts of things. You know what I mean? Tournaments of champions and whatnot. Like the challenge can fill our lives with content. I believe this, and I believe it should happen.
And really, the other thing that strikes me watching the challenge, it's really the only time I get to see promos for other things on MTV. And I kind of feel like maybe they should just go all challenge all the time.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I have not seen any ads for anything that looks worthwhile other than the challenge.
Yeah, no, there's some things that look, oh, I'm just not going to watch that, and then there's some things that look truly horrific and, like,
kind
sad.
Of offensive.
Yeah. But they got this one crown jewel, and apparently it's getting really good ratings, which is, it won the night on cable.
That just does not surprise me.
So, challenge.
You know, like rarely am I that unsurprised by TV ratings news, that especially one that seems somewhat out of character. But like, it's just I'm just struggling with how I would explain it to someone who just didn't watch it, as I was, you know, mere year or two ago. And it's just I think it's hard to totally define what makes it so incredible, but like, it has all the stuff we love about sports, really. You know, with the exception of teams that you've been rooting for since you were a kid, like, although there's players you've been rooting for since you were a kid if you've been watching long enough.
Yep, pretty much.
But, like,
I've been rooting for CT longer than I've been rooting for Arsenal, put it that way.
There you go. So it has characters, it has rivalries, it has fierce competition, it has twists and turns. It's high-level sports and an action flick, like, all rolled up in one.
Yep. Crazy personalities, drunkenness, random hookups, like,
yeah,
all of that.
It's just spectacular.
Yep. All right. We love the challenge. Bring us more.
More challenge.
Let's switch gears and talk about something that I don't know that many people are watching. It's She's Gotta Have It is not a show that anyone other than you has ever talked to me about.
Really?
A few people that I have shown it to have enjoyed it, and that's pretty much been it. I don't, you know, obviously enough people watched it that they wanted to make another season. But I
wonder if they'd,
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I'm not sure. I wonder how much Spike Lee's Academy Award played into all this, or at least the nomination.
Yeah, but I think that's possible. I also feel like Netflix doesn't give it a lot. Like, I feel like Dear White People, which we also love, gets way more run on the Netflix marketing machine than She's Gotta Have It does. Am I crazy about that?
It might be an algorithm issue. I'm getting a lot of She's Gotta Have It.
Oh, that's good.
But I really think it's good. I think this season is different than last. I kind of said that when we said we'd talk about it. Last season really was just playing out the movie in modern times with sort of modern language and thinking.
Yeah.
And I think that was really cool. And this season is now, and now I feel like we're in a Spike Lee story about people. Like, I feel like this is almost Spike Lee's Easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in a way, that's a central question for me, because I do sort of wonder, like, is it an Easy, or is this the story of Nola Darling? And if it's the story of Nola Darling, I feel like bringing all the ex-boyfriends back for the size parts that they have in season two, that was a thing that felt a little incongruous to me, because we don't have the same sort of character development with those people as we have with Nola, and they're largely out of Nola's life. So like did you care about what's going on in Jamie Overstreet's life, you know, in his divorce and whatever?
No, I cared about the other guys because I find them more interesting, though.
I mean,
I cared about Mars.
Mars, you care about Mars, right?
I'm
but you don't really
in Greer.
Care about you are you're interested in Greer. I was like, you know, Greer's in it the least for the amount of episodes that I've watched.
Yeah, me too.
But when he pops up, I'm kind of like, all right, great, you're buying a camera.
Okay, fine, yeah. But I would rather know more about Greer, who also is like a cultured French-speaking artist, than learn about Jamie Overstreet's marriage. But, you know, I see what you're saying.
And I just think it seems like they're going to, from a story standpoint, have to continue to come up with contrivances to keep those guys in her orbit if she's not dating them. You know what I mean? And I don't know. That's the one part of this where I'm like, I don't know how this plays out five, six season sort of, you know, situation.
Yeah. I see your point there, but can it just be a story about all the people we met in season one that expands beyond the orbit of Nola Darling?
Sure. Yeah, and if that's what it is, then that's what it is. But I mean, this season is also still very much from her point of view, right? It's very much from her point of view.
I thought much less so.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, how many episodes in are you?
I don't know, 3 or 4.
Okay, so we're in the same general spot. Last season was a ton of voiceover, and she was in almost every frame of the show. And I just think that has lessened somewhat. And if it continues to lessen over the course of the season and these lives sort of spin out, yeah, I mean, I'm less interested in Jamie Overstreet than Mars Blackmon, but that seems like a personal choice. Yep. I think the stories are being told well and interestingly.
Yeah. Still plenty of voiceover, by the way.
Yeah, but it's not the same. Trust me, because my wife hadn't seen season one, so I've been watching season one again a little bit, and the difference is notable.
Yeah. I just, I feel like we've gotten this far and we haven't mentioned just how, I mean, it's so Spike Lee, this show. You know, it has some of the, so many of his visual flourishes and, obviously his sort of musical style and imprint is all over the show. It's very music forward, maybe even more than season one.
Yeah, and can I just say this? In a world where I no longer feel super awesome about watching the work of one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, Woody Allen, it's nice to have another New York auteur working in a similar style, doing his thing, and I'll take as much Spike Lee content as Spike
available.
Is willing to offer. Yeah, and I don't really like New York, but there's this certain style of indie New York film that I think Spike and Woody are the kings of, and I love it.
Yeah, and Spike actually uses the whole New York with like all the people in it and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that that's totally fair, but okay.
I think it's very fair. But
I think Spike reflects his experience and Woody reflects his. I don't know.
You think all right, I'm not going to I just wanted to drive by on Woody. I could get into it.
I know you did.
But why bother?
Bother with the drive by would be a fair question as well.
Because the man's a disgrace.
Okay.
To cinema and society.
All right.
See, now I'm all off track. I do love what Spike's doing here, though. And you know, it also has some of his excess at times. You know, but like, I don't. Something about that is sort of part of the package and the charm. You know what I mean?
It's incredibly charming. Charm is the word. Charm is the operative word.
Yeah,
this is not Spike Lee's best work. It is Spike Lee at a very high charm level, and I'm fully into it.
Yeah, and he's he's had his fastball. I feel like, you know, just as a director, you know, in total, like the last 5 or 6 years, and it's still very much evidenced here. You know,
yeah. I think what's kind of incredible about this stage of Spike Lee's career is he can. Right now, I feel like Spike Lee can be 1992 Greg Maddux, heating it up at 95, 96, or he could be 1999 Greg Maddux, just beating you with guile and charming your pants off.
Yeah.
He's got both of those. He could be either one of those pitchers right now. He can be, you know, 88 Jordan or 95 or like 93 Jordan right now. And it's just... It's great, man. I love his work, and I love his tone, and I just think he's... There's also... Again, I don't love New York, but this thing makes it look so beautiful all the time.
He loves New York. Yeah, and
right,
like...
Right,
there's so many... You know, I mean, look, the phrase love letter New York is now certainly a cliche in terms of talking about works of television and film, but there are just so many great shots, and they're... All these like real Brooklyn shots, you know what I mean? Like it's there's Coney Island, but it's a lot of the New York that you don't always necessarily see on film. Yep. And just like shots of Nola walking around the city or going to her happy place, like it does look really beautiful. And
you know, it's funny you say love letter to New York and. It's almost like what makes this super cool in the way Spike does that thing, the love letter to New York thing, is that it's almost like this is a letter about something entirely different, but where the love of New York comes through in kind of a magical way.
Yep. Yeah. It's all really great to take in visually, including the fact that like at literally every person in this is maybe just a shade too hot, but.
Oh yeah.
But it's okay. I don't mind.
No, I mean, this is showbiz, baby.
And I got to say, because we've gotten this far, DeWanda Wise as Nola Darling. I mean, none of this works if, because she's on screen so much, none of this works if she's not just ridiculously compelling.
Absolute killer, man. She's phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, because all these people, like, she has to have it, right? for this show to work.
Indeed, she does.
And she definitely does, yeah. So I'm a fan, excited to finish the rest of this, and excited for more if they'll bring it to us. Despite if I worry a little bit about where story and all that stuff is headed, it's a small quibble for me.
Word.
All right. You want to talk John Wick 3?
You sound not excited, and yes, I do.
Okay. All right, so went to the movies, saw John Wick 3. So now, you have tried pretty hard to get me to watch John Wick movies in the past.
Had you not watched any of them?
I think I did watch John Wick 1. I think I also fell asleep. So I don't really have a lot of, I just didn't have much coming into John Wick 3.
Well, this is very on brand for me, but I did not remember that you were kind of not into the John Wick franchise.
I wasn't not into it. I mean, yeah, I guess not, maybe not. You're right. Not into it is a word.
Hold on. Let's.
I wasn't actively not into it. You know what I mean?
Okay, but take a step back and talk about how we came to talk about this on the podcast. You were like, I'm seeing John Wick 3 right now. Do you want to talk about it? And I was like, I guess I'll have to see it for next week.
Yeah, so basically I got invited to go see John Wick 3. And I was like, because that's the thing. It's like, yeah, I haven't watched any. And not into it is fair because I'm not into it, right? I haven't watched any. But it wasn't like I was like, ugh, John Wick. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, a lot of people love these movies, and I'd heard many, many good things about them. I knew this was going to be a big deal, so I was curious. I was into going to see John Wick. So, before I get to where I'm at with John Wick 3,
I think we all know where you're at.
In your experience, your estimation, what do I miss by kind of coming into John Wick 3 cold?
Fundamentally not that much.
Okay. That's kind of what I figured. I mean, both before and after.
Like,
a lot?
You miss a lot, but also fundamentally not that much.
But mostly crazy. I miss some crazy action, right?
Well, I mean, you also miss some crazy plot.
And there's some there were some references to John Wick's dog that I came to understand later, but didn't really as we were watching, and a couple other things. But I don't know. It didn't seem to me, John Wick 3, I hesitate to use the word works, but it can be a standalone piece of art, no?
Yeah, sure. In as much as I believe, and I think most people who enjoy them would agree that its primary function is a action thrill ride that more or less works whether you know what's going on or not.
Gotcha. Okay.
But for someone who likes to know what's going on, you might enjoy it more if you knew what was going on.
That's possible. There's now zero chance that I'm seeing John Wick 1 and 2 after
this. Understand. There's not a lot here plot-wise, and I don't think the movie purports to be anything else or makes any apologies for that. But what is there plot wise really doesn't hold together at all if you haven't seen the first two.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so I would like to hear your take, because I'm assuming you're going to give us some affirmative love for John Wick 3. Most people love this movie, right? Like,
it's exactly what it's supposed to be.
Okay.
It's damn near 2 hours of some of the best action fighting sequences you'll see.
Let me stop you there. Because it's well over 2 hours. It's not damn near 2 hours. It's well over 2 hours.
It's like 210 or 215,
I think. Yeah, yeah.
And what I'm saying is about 20 minutes of that is not thrilling action.
I would say roughly 2 hours and 5 minutes for me was not thrilling action.
Okay, well, I don't. Here's what I don't get. Why is that not some of the best action sequences you've ever seen? Because it is for me, and I feel like I've seen more action films than you have, if anything.
Yeah, okay, so...
Like, to me, it's some of the most visible, like, actual action stunt work and just general badassery, and I just love watching it, man.
Yeah,
I
so,
just
all right.
love watching it.
I have no argument with that. I agree with you 100%. Like, if you're asking me... If you were like, hey, say something nice about John Wick 3, I would definitely be like... You know, they know how to film an action sequence. Keanu, you know, doing most of his own stunts. You don't have the quick cutting, you know, like when you watch Mission Impossible fights and you sort of, yeah, it's hard to know exactly where you are. You know what I mean?
Or you're watching, you know, CGI superheroes move in blurs. And like, this is real dudes doing crazy ass stuff, and it's awesome. And much of it is Keanu. There's that scene in the slight spoiler in the knife like place. I don't know what it was. There's like a damn museum of knives where like literally 150 knives are thrown around, and there's like a minute long single shot of him just stabbing and throwing knives and fighting people, and it's remarkable.
Yeah, I don't see that's this. I mean, basically, that's what it comes down to for me is like I appreciate the cinematic craft of that, how hard it is to film.
But you don't like watching.
I don't find that remotely entertaining. It's you know what it's. All right, I'm getting us in trouble with this analogy, but like.
Derek Madden at Madden on air on Twitter.
You know when you're watching porn, okay, and like the dude is just jackhammering, you know, just boom, 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 boom. You know what I mean?
And maybe you got a nice shot of the ass and balls.
Right. And he's just pounding. You know what I mean? Like, and you could tell the guy thinks like, oh, I'm really banging right now. I'm banging so hard. You know what I mean? This movie is like that shot, but for 2 hours and 10 minutes, it's just jackhammer fucking. That's it.
I see it differently.
And after a while, it's so rote and so dehumanizing, and I found it to be so dull. If I had not gone to see this movie, with a friend, I would have walked out. And probably an hour and a half into the movie, I would say. Like, when I looked up and I was like, oh my God, there's another 45 minutes to go. Like, I was in agony.
As yet another pane of glass was shattered.
Yes. Just endless fighting. There's no point to any of it. And here's the other thing that I'll get. And maybe this is a thing that I missed from not one and two. Why am I rooting for John Wick? Like, he's an assassin. They're all assassins. He's just, I guess, a slightly better assassin.
He tried to get out of the game, man, and he was dragged back in by Theon Greyjoy's ungrateful ass. Look,
but none of that's in this movie. You know what I mean? So he's literally just slaughtering dudes who are trying to slaughter him. And that is, to me, it's not entertainment. I'm just not.
Okay.
I'm not entertained.
Ungracefully extend your pornography metaphor. I hear you, but I don't see it as the way you described it. I would say, in fact, what this is like an acrobatic, wildly impressive, not simply jackhammering, but twisting and turning and doing all manner of improbable or even impossible sex moves that I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying like that looks like the best possible sex, and I'm certainly not saying I gotta try that, but I am saying, damn.
See, that's the thing is like, I feel like if you took one of those scenes and made it the climax to a movie,
not impressive.
That was an unintentional extension of that pun. If you made it the climax to a movie, then I would be into it. But it's just, you made the whole movie out of the scene, essentially. And like after a while, like damn, just becomes rote. Like it's like watching somebody else play a video game where, you know, for like 20 minutes you can marvel at like the world building and the craft. And then after a while, it's just you're hitting this dude, you're hitting this. No offense to the people out there who like watching other people play video games, because that's a thing now. But it just.
Well, yeah, I mean, so this is kind of what I was going to say.
It doesn't hold any resonance for me emotionally at all.
No. Well, I'm not sure it holds resonance for me emotionally. But I go, I don't walk into John Wick the same way I walk into, I don't know, what's a good dramatic movie we've seen recently? Sadly, there aren't many.
I get that. Like, I mean, you know, kind of comparing it to the last Mission Impossible movie.
I'd rather watch this all day than the last Mission Impossible with its silly plot twists that make no sense and don't hold together.
I know going in that you're going to get a sort of incomprehensible plot and some crazy masks and exceedingly ridiculous stunts.
But if you told me, this is my point. If you told me we're making Mission Impossible, only this time we're cutting out 90% of the masks and plot twists and replacing it with more cool fights, I'd be like, great. Sign me up. The masks and plot twists are not doing anything for me.
I don't want more set pieces for my Mission Impossible. And I think that it has more than enough set pieces. And I feel like the in-between, as incomprehensible as the plotting is of that, is way better than the extremely limited in-between of this movie. You get like a 2-minute break where they just transition from one fighting location to the next, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I disagree that it's better.
I just think it's more.
Yeah.
And I see no value in it. That's where we differ.
Why do we want to watch movies where people are like murdered? There's no cops. People are just murdered in Grand Central Station, and it's like, and everyone just keeps walking like nothing else is happening. I just don't. It's such a depressing world to live in.
Impossible?
Like, I don't
want to watch.
I don't want to get into like the, you know, the just the real world, but like there's so much of just wanton violence in the real world. Like, I don't understand why we're just sitting here watching like literally like 2 hours of violence cut together. Like I said, like a gonzo porn flick. This is super fun. It's, oh my God, John Wick 3. Guys, I can't wait to get back to the theater and watch Keanu slice people up.
I think it's kind of dishonest to suggest that there's more to Mission Impossible than those same base instincts. Now, what you seem to be saying is like action movies are the scourge of our society, and that's a fine opinion, but I'm not really on board.
I don't know if action movies are the scourge of our society, but I hate the way that we've decided the only way to do the action movie is more. Bigger, just pump it up, take it over the top, more, excess. That part of it has lost me. I know I sound old as hell when I'm just be like, can we just go back to Die Hard? But like, can we just go back to Die Hard? Like, fucking love Die Hard. That's great. That's a movie with a story and some cool set pieces, you know? That doesn't seem too much to ask.
First of all, I'd argue Die Hard's story is not all that spectacular, as great a movie as it is.
Okay.
Second of all, I this is really the key point to me. John Wick is not what you're mad at, to my ear. And I wholeheartedly dispute the notion that anyone goes to Mission Impossible for anything other than explosions and fighting.
Yeah, and look, that was not what I was saying. What I was saying is that they do the between stuff just better. That's all I was saying. I'm not saying that that's a.
And I wholeheartedly disagree with that as well. They just do it more.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think they do it better at all, and that's my whole point. Is to me, John Wick is just the intellectually honest version of a bad movie, like the most recent Mission Impossible that everyone loved. I
didn't love it, by the way.
I know, but don't don't waste my time with BS story that's not good anyway. Like, what you seem to be saying is, well, I need a break from all this action. And I'm saying, if I'm going to the theater to see action, give me as much as of it as you can and make it look as cool as you can.
Yeah, see,
and
I don't think
Mission Impossible does either of those
things. I don't go to the theater to see action. I go to the theater to see stories. And
okay, well then I think there are less and less reasons for you to go to the theater.
Yeah,
and I think
we're
that's
finding this out.
I think that's a valid complaint, and I agree with you, but I don't think that should stop me from going to see John Wick, and I certainly don't think it makes something like Mission Impossible. And that's just the version or the movie we've chosen to express the idea.
Yeah.
But there's tons of action movies that have nonsensical plots that are nothing more than long bridges between action set pieces. I don't see why those bridges shouldn't be short.
But let me ask you then, what makes like the first Taken better than successive Takens? Right? It's that there was an original idea and story in the first Taken, no?
I'm not saying original idea and good story have no place in movies. So
in action,
I don't know what you're.
No, it's. I just mean that. Like, I just
could
found
John
this.
Wick, could John
like,
Wick
what you're
totally...
what you're saying is intellectually honest. I found to be completely like nihilistic and depressing. Like, why does any? I didn't understand why anything mattered in that movie at all. It was just watching people slaughter other people, and one guy is better at it than some other people. And nobody dies, by the way. It's like everyone just keeps getting up and then killed again, and just it's just not my shit, man. It's just not my shit.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's what this is. It's just not your shit, and I just where I'm disputing is like you're allowed to like whatever you want. I'm just not really on board with the concept that this is somehow more nihilistic or less interested in storytelling than most action movies.
Ooh,
I just think it's more honest.
I mean, maybe you're watching a lot of more, but that's the more honest thing. That's what I mean. It's like, they're not even pretending to
right.
tell a story.
And if you're interested in, and if you love action movies and you don't find it hammer fucking and you think it's a more intriguing thing than that, then this is for you.
I don't mind any of the individual elements of this movie. Like I like kung fu fights. Like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is like one of my favorite movies ever. Like I don't,
but again, this is my point.
Acrobatic stunts I'm into, gunplay I don't mind. It's just when it's just nothing but like it's not a fucking movie, it's a music video.
Okay.
It's a 2-hour and 10-minute music video.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I don't even need to dispute that, but I don't think that's what you went to see.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And some of that's my fault for, you know, not quite knowing what. Obviously, everyone by three is on board and understands this, you know, and I came into it cold, so I had some idea, but I was not prepared for what John Wick 3 brought, and I acknowledge that many, many people I like and respect, including yours truly, really love these films, but I don't understand why.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even, like, that phrasing is a little misleading. Like, really love these films is, like, that's not what we're here for. Like, I don't think any of your friends are,
what, because
like,
I called it a film instead of a movie?
Well, just, like, maybe that's not, I don't mean to, like, nitpick a stupid distinction, but I'm just saying, like, I don't think anybody is... brings their notebook to take some thoughts back to directing school. Like,
my guest was writing a story about it,
like,
so he
brought
it up.
This
notebook,
is not,
but yes.
They're not showing this in screenwriting seminars. You know, I don't.
No, that's. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to put this through the lens of high art. Like, I mean, I know enough to know that it's. You know what I mean? I know enough about it to know it's not that.
You know
right.
what I mean?
So my only point is you seem to be comforted by the pretense of a movie like Mission Impossible that tells an incomprehensible, meaningless story to get you from set piece to set piece.
I want to watch a story. If there's no story, I'm not interested in any movie that has no story. Right? It goes right back to Dunkirk and 10 other movies we've talked about that don't have a fucking story.
That's fair, and obviously I hated Dunkirk as much as you did, and to me the difference between Dunkirk and John Wick is what it purports to be and the expectations I had going in. And that to me is a critical difference,
I guess.
And if you to me the your mistake is going to see a movie that is a sort of movie you're uninterested in. Whereas Dunkirk's mistake is pretending it's something it's not.
That's fair. I don't know. I was interested because, like I said, so many people say these movies are great, including you. Like when you broached me watching John Wick, right? It was like, you got to see John Wick. It's awesome.
No, you saw it before me and you broached it, but yeah.
No. I'm talking about originally when you asked me to see John Wick 1. Or whatever it was.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I loved it. But I would imagine I also said there's not much story. It's just a bunch of Keanu being a psycho badass.
I don't think you said that. But it's look, okay. I'm not even against Keanu. Like, I love other Keanu movies in which he's a psycho badass. I just found this one to be so interminable. It's just like...
Fair enough.
It's never ending. Ugh. Same thing over and over again. This time he's on a horse, you know, like, oh, great. Okay.
Right. But again, that's why it's not the same thing is
because he's on a horse.
Because the people who
now he's got knives.
Because the people who love this are here for the over the top set pieces.
I don't understand why you love it. I really don't. But okay.
I mean, I think you do. And
I honestly don't.
Run its course.
But yes, you're right. This conversation has run its course, much like the movie does. I want to jump in to something that you didn't see.
Yeah.
Because
I gather you didn't much like.
It's kind of the same same sort of thing, right? Like, it's, you know, so there's some genre issues here. So we talked about last week The Perfection on Netflix. Which at the time I thought was a Fatal Attraction style, you know, Black Swan. I guess Black Swan might be the best analog for what I thought this was going to be. You know, you have, Black Swan was about ballerinas. This is about cellists, and you have one cellist who's like jealous of the other cellist and goes for revenge, and it was going to be like a psychological thriller. Turns out to be way more of a horror movie than that.
I also thought it was a psychological thriller, and I actually was trying to get my wife to watch it with me for my podcast responsibilities, so she insisted on watching the preview. And when I watched the preview, I was like, actually, I don't think I'm going to watch this.
Yep. And I gave you an out. I was like, I don't think you're going to like this. It's weird because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of gore. It's not all that different in that way to me from, you know, Keanu slicing people up. A lot of people get sliced up and mutilated, and it's weird. And I'm not going to say that I liked it. The movie just left me like, huh, at the end. There's a lot of twists. They're a little ridiculous, and there's a lot happening, and
is it supernatural?
No, there's no supernatural. There's no supernatural, but it is. It's weird. It's just weird. And,
yeah.
And I came out of it like, huh. So I don't. Yeah. It sort of left me stunned and confused and. If the idea of watching something like that and feeling that way is appealing to you, then I would say go for it. And if not, you probably want to skip it.
Yeah, I feel like I made the right decision.
Yeah. It's not even like, this movie will haunted me and stay with me forever. I was just like,
huh, I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah.
So, that's The Perfection in a nutshell. If you want to spend 90 minutes on not knowing how you're going to feel, then go for it.
cool.
All right. Fleabag, season two. I think we know how we feel about Fleabag at this point, yeah?
We love it?
Yeah, I'm on board. This is Phoebe Waller-Bridge being Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Right, that's what it seems like, and this is something I didn't know how much I missed.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I love her. I think she's brilliant. I think this you want to talk about the opposite of John Wick. I think this series does so much with its plot, like thematically and philosophically. Just like I think she's so funny and her, like, the stuff she's dealing with and going through is laid so bare, and you sort of see it in all her interactions. And, like, it's just, I think this is a brilliant show about a woman struggling with loss. And I think she's so good, and it's so well written and acted. I just love it.
Yeah, she's hilarious. Many of the situations are hilarious.
Yeah.
She's an interesting character, and it's a very watchable show. I find it just more kind of like charming than I think you are more, maybe more deeply in love with the show than I am, but I do enjoy it quite a bit. It's an easy watch, even though at times it can be uncomfortable. It's sort of, you know, it'll play that Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of this situation is really uncomfortable. You know, that Veep does that a little bit too, that kind of line some.
Yeah, I think this does it with so much more heart than either of those shows.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think those shows are going for heart. This is much more, I think, an emotionally resonant version of that. I think it's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what makes it stand out to me. And not to go too downery, but like I've sort of had a lot of personal loss in my life somewhat over the last couple of years, and I just think it's really resonant in that way. I think she does a really sort of remarkable job of handling those issues in a show that is fundamentally a comedy but really is incredibly heartfelt and thoughtful.
Yeah. I dare say Killing Eve missed some of that touch this season.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant about not knowing I missed it is like Killing Eve has been great, and we'll talk about the finale next week, but it's not quite the same.
Yep. Yeah, and for those of you who've seen the Killing Eve finale, I'll be interested for your take when we talk about that next week. But yeah, this gives you, obviously, you know, it's a very different show.
Very different, and it feels more like just sort of raw Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Did you ever watch Crashing? Her crashing?
Yeah, we talked about it on the pod, right? That was the where they lived in the old hospital or whatever?
Yeah, and that was more like a you know, pure funny sort of sitcom-y version of her thing. But this just feels like unadulterated Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and I want more and more.
What a weird, like, not weird, idiosyncratic lane she's carved out for herself in the culture.
Yeah, very specific, and you know, nobody's better at being her.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even think anyone could try, really. Like, she is uniquely, distinctly her, I feel like.
Yeah, and really pretty remarkable.
I guess Lena Dunham, we talked about her, during the pre-show. I mean, that's kind of an analog. Although their senses of humor, I think, are pretty different.
Yeah, and for better or worse, Phoebe Waller-Bridge feels more self-aware.
Yes, for better and for worse. Speaking of self-aware, I want to talk Lakers real quick. Do you mind? I know this, like, this big ESPN piece or whatever. did it really say anything we didn't already know? It's just more shading, some fun details. Yeah, there's some fun details, but it's just it seems like just more shading in the giant back tattoo that is Lakers dysfunction at this point. I think it's really interesting.
The Heath Ledger story is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's true. The Heath Ledger story is pretty incredible.
There's no giant revelation. There's a coloring in of like a rough outline of dysfunction that we knew was there. And I find it delightful. See, here's why.
Why didn't we see this coming when LeBron was going there? Why didn't we understand?
This has nothing to do with LeBron. I saw this coming 5 years ago when they gave Kobe that ridiculous contract.
Yeah, but that's kind of what I mean. It's not. I wouldn't say it has nothing to do with LeBron. I'm not putting this on LeBron. Let me be very clear about that. But what I do think we should have seen coming was that, you know, bringing LeBron into your organization comes with certain challenges. I think we've seen that from Cleveland and Miami at this point, right? That's not really in dispute. And the Lakers, in their dysfunction, are completely unequipped to handle those challenges, no?
Oh, sure. If you had asked me when this was happening, hey, do you think that LeBron going to the Lakers will expose further Laker dysfunction? I would have said, oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, see, and I mean, if you'd asked me that specific question, I might have said yeah, but I did not think of it at all when it's happening, right?
Oh no, I did for sure.
No, I for sure did.
This is more spectacular and remarkable than I ever could have expected, but this is not so far off, like, generally from what I might have thought would happen. But again, LeBron is just like a spare piece of straw in the wrong place that caught the fire and lit something else on fire. Like, he's not – this really isn't about LeBron at all.
Oh, look, yeah. I think, look, in the – well –
this is about an organization that's been run brutally from the top since Dr. Jerry Buss died.
That's absolutely true. And there's all sorts of infighting and bad decisions.
It's a mess.
I don't want to put this on LeBron. That's not what I'm here to do. But if I can throw just a giant big old...
Stop it.
But if I can just throw a giant big old butt onto that sentence, here's my butt. I do feel like it's not unreasonable to say that Rich Paul played a giant hand in sinking two separate NBA franchises in the same season. Like, just took a dump on two franchises' seasons, no? And we're not really talking about that. Like,
no, I feel like it's kind of a big deal. I guess. I mean, yes. You're not wrong, but also, like, those franchises had to be complicit in a way. Like, the right thing is just to ignore the dude.
Yeah, I guess.
They made a massive philosophical error by publicly asking for a trade, but that's on them. And it shouldn't really affect the way those two franchises do business, and it only did because they do bad business.
It affected the way both franchises did business with each other, with themselves.
That's what I'm saying, but that's...
Yes. All the players on the current squads of each team, I agree with you 1,000% that the dysfunction of the Lakers is way bigger and way deeper and way long lasting than Clutch Sports' presence here, and would be here in a vacuum without Clutch Sports' presence. But I think we also have to say Rich Paul is a bad actor in this situation. No,
Rich Paul, I would say, engaged in bad faith and frankly like just dumb behavior, but that was a thing that happened during the season or surrounding the handling of Anthony Davis. what we're learning about the Lakers is about dysfunction that really has nothing to do with
it. Well, not just the handling of Anthony Davis, the, you know, hanging around and flying on team charters and getting and trying to get Luke Walton fired and, like, you know what I mean? Like, not that, look, obviously agents, you know, Rich Paul's not the only agent to try to get a coach fired.
This is my point.
And Luke Walton's not the only coach that Rich Paul's tried to get fired. But
no, and it's a LeBron thing. Let's be honest.
Right, like, that's what I mean. That was my butt.
Rich Paul is trying to get If Rich Paul's trying to get Luke Walton fired, it's because LeBron doesn't want to be coached by Luke Walton, and that is something we can discuss and criticize on its own merits.
Particularly when they never want to replace the guy they're trying to get. Like, they never have a better replacement for the guy they're trying to get fired. Like, yeah, the best answer Clutch Sports has come up with is Ty Lue.
Yeah, but this is what I always go back to. LeBron has done that everywhere he's gone. And where would you say LeBron was the most successful?
Miami.
And what happened when he went to the Miami front office and asked for the coach to be
fired? Pat Riley put his foot in his ass.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then they won two titles. So to me, we have examples of a well-run organization in Miami and examples of poorly run organizations in Cleveland and Los Angeles. And it's really as simple as that. If you think you're going to get a guy who might be the greatest player of all time, and he's not going to try to throw his weight around or have his agent ask for coaches to be fired, then you don't know what the hell you're doing. And if you capitulate to everything that guy asks for after he signs a four-year contract with you and commits to you, that's your bad business. LeBron has to be expected to try to do those things. And if you, as ownership, as management, cannot stand your ground and do what you believe to be right, why do you have that job?
Yeah, that's a great point, particularly the part about the four-year deal, because at least in Cleveland, LeBron had the I can leave any year leverage over his head. You know what I mean? The Lakers don't even have that. Like, he's here.
No. And I hear all these people being like, well, LeBron made him sign JaVale McGee and Lance Stephenson. And I'm like, first of all, I don't necessarily believe that. Second of all, he can't make them do anything once he signs on the dotted line.
Nope.
He can't. His leverage is gone. Yeah. He's the Laker.
I mean,
they can do whatever they want.
I suppose he could do an Anthony Davis, but it's pretty hard with 3 years left on the deal, right?
LeBron James is way too PR savvy to demand a trade literal days after signing a 4-year contract.
Right. It's not going to happen. So
it's not happening. So the Lakers effed up. Did LeBron behave like a responsible team manager or owner or GM? No, but that's not his job. His job is to be LeBron. And if there's a criticism of him, it should be that this wasn't his best season and he was hurt. The criticism of LeBron.
You can level some other criticism about him checking out. And, you know what I mean?
Okay. The criticism of LeBron is, well, he never should have had his agent try to get Anthony Davis to town. Shut up. Of course he should.
Yeah,
LeBron and his agent.
Saying he never should have tried? I think it was maybe just the way they went about trying that seemed to be the issue.
No, again, I agree with that they made mistakes. I don't think they did it the best way they could have for their own purposes. I'm just saying it's the Lakers' job to manage all that.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
Yeah. I think all of this is just a you know what I mean? It's like a really great amuse-bouche on like the incredible meal that this NBA offseason is going to be.
This finals is an incredible. I mean, okay. The only superstar to ever walk away from a championship team is Michael Jordan twice. And that was for retirement. Never in the history of basketball has a superstar left a team that just won the title. And whichever of these two teams wins the title, there's at least a 50% chance of that happening. So let's start with that.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Although didn't Shaq would you call Shaq a walk away when he left the Lakers?
They had lost.
Oh, they lost. Oh, you're right. They lost to the Pistons, right? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's never happened in the history of the sport. It's a remarkable thing. And does the outcome affect that? Will Kevin Durant even play? how do these two teams guard each other's best players? Whether that's Durant. I mean, if it's Durant and Kawhi, then they maybe guard each other. When it's Curry and Kawhi, how the opposition deals with that guy on the other end is maybe the biggest question of the series. Like, there is so much here. And
yeah, it's pretty wild to me, particularly the KD thing. And I've made this point before, but it's now gotten to the point where you hear people. Like I was listening to like a podcast about the draft, and people were talking about the Knicks about how so and so going to play with KD and Kyrie, like they were already on the team. Like, this is just
crazy.
Like, Kevin Durant has literally said nothing. And I'm not here to tell you that he's not going to the Knicks, which everyone believes now. And I'm not saying that there isn't some, basis for the rumors. Sure. But, like, the man has literally said nothing, which means we literally know nothing about what he wants to do and whether he'd actually make this decision. So I don't understand this, like, talking about this like it's already happened. That's insane, man, to me.
It drives me nuts. It's irresponsible trash. And here's the thing, man. First of all, he has said one thing, and what he has said consistently over and over again is, I have not yet made this decision. That's all he's told us, is he has not yet decided. And yet everyone is sure something has been decided. And what
this is a guy who has shown some ability to buck conventional wisdom about his career in the past. You know what I mean?
To change his mind.
Yeah.
So even if he thought he had made the decision, what's to say he wouldn't change his mind before June 30th? This is a month away. And here's the other thing, man. I think what has changed here more than the Kevin Durant, anything specific to Durant, is just the nature of discourse about this sort of stuff. So many people seem to feel so compelled to speak with such surety about things they don't know. And it's one thing in my mind to speak assuredly about outcomes of a sporting event that is yet to happen as if you know because you think you've analyzed it well. Like, to me, that's a thing that, like, we do it because that's how it works, and we accept that we don't actually know the future, but we speak with authority because we believe we have analyzed it correctly. Fine. I will never understand speaking with authority about other people's decision making when you don't even know the criteria.
Yeah.
You don't even know the system. You don't know his priorities. And to suggest that you know, like, there's maybe five people in this world who have real information about Kevin Durant's decision, and every single other person speaking like they know it. You're just completely making it up.
What drives me crazy is people not just speculating about, like, this decision that he's quote unquote made already, but, like, the people stepping into his shoes, like, during these finals and saying, well, KD has to be feeling with Steph and those guys playing so well with it. Here's, like, you have any idea?
This is his worst nightmare. Yeah. They're winning without him. Or he likes those guys and he's had fun playing with them and he feels like he did some work to contribute to this, having one of the great regular season performances. Yeah. Like, I just,
and he's still planning to play in a couple, in like a game or two. Right. Like, this is insane.
Here's the new one that I love.
Think Kevin Durant's worried about his place in the league and what people, like? Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant.
And then we get this now. Oh, well, he's flying with the team to Toronto, so he's definitely not coming back, because if he cared and he was really worried about playing again, he'd stay at home and rehab. Like, okay, or he's flying with the team trainers to another place where they have all the best equipment for him to rehab on.
Or, like, you want to make Toronto think that he might play in game one. Like, exactly. Even if he can't play, he might want to.
We don't know.
Right?
We have no idea. And it happens with outcome predictions in a way I find obnoxious too, because the same idiots they'll pick Milwaukee to win in six games, and Milwaukee will go out and win the first game, and see, I told you, Milwaukee's the better team. Toronto has no chance. Milwaukee's definitely going to win, and then Toronto will win game two, and you picked Milwaukee to win in six. But all of a sudden, now Toronto's definitely going to win. Oh, I saw this wrong. Now that I saw game two, Toronto definitely has this thing in the bag. It's over.
Yeah.
And then Milwaukee wins again. And Milwaukee, see, you idiot. How could you think Toronto was going to win? Clearly Milwaukee. And it's just like, or maybe the outcome just hasn't been decided yet.
Right. Or the body language doctors who, like, always happen to be telling you from hindsight all the body language they noticed after the team lost. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
You know. Just, look, I get it. We gotta fill in the margins. There's a lot of speculation. But I think people have taken it a little too far with this league at times.
Yeah, man, and I don't know that I get it. Like, I hear what you're saying. There's a lot of – there's content to create. There's time to fill. But, like, I don't think it takes a genius or, like, an unimaginable amount of work to have, like, semi-intelligent, reasonable conversations about the stuff we do know as opposed to pretend you know things you just don't.
Yep.
Like, yep. You don't have to pretend to know the answer to talk about something. You don't. In fact, it's a much more interesting discussion if you leave the door open for multiple possibilities. Like, I understand why we have to talk about what Kevin Durant might do. I don't understand why 80% of people have to pretend they know exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, yeah. Or we could let it play out. All right, I'm fired up about these.
That I have to say, we can't. Because, like, I got to go to work and talk about stuff
right,
today.
Right, you're right. All right, fair enough.
So, like, I get that part. And people who are like, why can't you just wait and see? It's like, well, because it's a month away, and I got a month of radio shows to do, and that's what we do here.
But there
so
is
that's not what you like.
But there is an
away.
NBA finals that you could talk about at least for a good portion
and
of
we
that,
will.
Right? Yeah,
and we will, and we'll talk about it more than not. And I try not to talk about Kevin Durant in a speculative "what's he gonna do" way, but I do think there are interesting things to talk about regarding his decision making, and I think those things are valid fodder. I just don't know why so many people feel like they have to say, hey, I know what he's going to do. This is definitely it.
I just – it's with him particularly, I just feel like I don't know how many guys in the league that we just know less than we know.
Yeah, you know
him.
What? Let me close it on this because I think this is a key point that you and I both sort of circled around that I find particularly – maybe not confusing. I think I understand why it happens, but frustrating. And it makes me – this is the thing that makes me feel sympathetic and understanding towards Kevin Durant's frustration. I heard someone talking on the radio about how – it was a Toronto guy saying, you know, we really haven't talked about Kawhi and next year at all. At the beginning of the season, he said, I haven't decided. I'm not going to talk about it. We're here to win a title. And we're going to do that and worry about the rest after. And we haven't really bothered him about it, and he hasn't really brought it up. And then that guy from Toronto was like, unlike Kyrie and Kevin Durant. And I thought about that. And he's right about Kyrie. He is.
He's right about
Kyrie.
Kyrie
kept talking about it. He kept saying stuff. The reason we kept talking about Kyrie's future is because Kyrie kept talking about his future. And I'm not saying he brought it up. But when it was brought up, he said cryptic, weird stuff. You know what Kevin Durant says?
Nothing. And that's why he's so pissed.
He says, I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. That's all he ever says. I haven't decided. I don't want to talk about it. And yet people act like he's bringing it up.
Yep.
And if I was him, that would drive me up a goddamn wall.
He's a man who can't put the fire out, and everyone is yelling at him for being on fire.
That's right. He's like, I'm holding a fire extinguisher, and everyone's like, you can't use that. And he's like, but you're yelling at me for being on fire.
Yep.
And they're like, but you're on fire. And he's like, well, I've got this extinguisher right here. And they're like, no. Like, what's he supposed to do? And how, honestly, how is he supposed to remain smiley and happy throughout this when it's one thing to have to come out and say, well, I'll be taking applications in June and have people be like, why are you going to say that? What are you doing?
Yep.
It's another thing to be like, I don't want to talk about it and have everybody go, oh, he's definitely going to New York and then be like, fuck you.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, look, the answer for what he's supposed to do is definitively say something one way or the other, which the second that you that comes out of your mouth, you realize, like, he doesn't owe us that. He doesn't owe anybody that. No. He doesn't owe the Warriors that. Exactly. It's dumb. There's no reason that he needs to tell you before any of this happening what he's going to do. There's no reason he needs to decide before it's happening what he's going to do.
Yeah, and frankly, although they're not the most obnoxious actual participants in this whole shenanigans, I'm not sure anybody annoys me more than the Warriors fan who screamed about how it was the right thing to do when he came here from Oklahoma City, who now believes he somehow owes them more than he's given them, which is all he's given them is MVP-level performance at the highest possible level when they needed it the most. And these people now want more from a guy who did this the same way when he came here.
F those guys. You know, he came for him, and yes. He delivered.
Guess all right. What? Kevin Durant gets to live his life for Kevin Durant's reasons and on Kevin Durant's terms because he's earned it.
Right. Not even because he's a person and that's what people get to do.
Well, I just mean, yes, in terms of making your own decision, sure. But I just mean in terms of dictating the terms of engagement, he has earned that with his success.
Yep, sure. He certainly earned his leverage. Yeah,
exactly. That's what contracts are. They're about leverage. Kevin Durant has earned his leverage, and he is using it, and good for him.
Agreed. All right, we should get out of here. We can talk finals next week, at which point they may actually have played a game.
It is so slow. They will play two games between now and the next time we record.
I can't wait. I'm so ready for them to tip it off tomorrow.
Yeah, man, this really is a compelling basketball series. Like, forgetting all – there's so much drama, which just makes it better, but this is – It doesn't need any of that because this is going to be one of the most compelling NBA Finals series we've had in a while, I believe.
I don't know. I do see a path where the Warriors win handily. But I also see many other paths where it is competitive. So
I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be a 7-game, you know, deeply competitive thing, but it certainly has the chance to be that. And I just think basketball wise, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I'm fascinated to see the basketball part of it. All right, let's jump into homework. We mentioned Killing Eve earlier. I've already seen the finale, but Cole's going to be watching it. We'll talk about that next week.
The new baby didn't get around to Killing Eve finale, and I apologize.
Yes, it's okay. So I haven't given you any static for not watching anything.
No, I know. I'm apologizing to the people.
I'm impressed that you saw John Wick 3.
Yeah, we baby's first grandma babysitting.
Yeah, I was gonna say that because that requires some arrangements.
Yeah, you know, get the bottle ready, set grandma up with all the important tools, and boom. We had to do some banking on the road as well, so it was a two birds, one stone scenario.
Speaking of which, we you know, this is something that I completely didn't talk about at all in the pre-show homework meeting, so I'm just throwing this at you now. Do you have any opportunity to get to a movie theater in the coming week?
I think I know what you're after, and I would like to, so I'll try.
All right. Well, we're going to try to see Rocket Man, I think. This week, because that's kind of in our wheelhouse.
It's going to be tricky because the wife definitely wants to see it, and I don't know if we'll both be able to get away again, but I'll see what I can do.
All right, so that's a possibility. What's more definite is Good Omens, which is on Amazon Prime. There's a Netflix show called How to Sell Drugs Online Fast. That's another one that we're recommending just solely on the title.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, a lot of these weird title ones have turned out to be quite delightful.
It's true. Sure, I got, yeah.
Like, I feel like this occupies, knowing almost nothing about it, I want to put this in the same basket as The End of the Fucking World.
What if it's a 12-episode Hymns commercial?
All right. I suppose that's possible.
It's just the guy, the dad with the ponytail. I'm a doctor.
I feel like that might be a very inside radio joke, though.
No, I mean, if you're watching ESPN or the NBA, you know the Hymns commercial I'm talking about.
Too, but yeah. I just feel like only by being in radio do you realize quite how ubiquitous the Hymns commercials are.
See, we don't have a lot of those. I think that might be a sports radio thing.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it's sports radio, yeah.
It's a little weird because we got a lot of male listeners, but we don't have any Hymns ads.
Maybe you need to talk to somebody.
Quiet and confidentially. All right. Always Be My Maybe is a movie that people have been talking about for a while, coming to Netflix this week with Ali Wong and Russell Park.
Big fan of Ali Wong. Russell Park is the dude from Ant-Man, right?
I think so. And Fresh Off the Boat, I want to say, is this show that he's
on.
Have
you watched that?
No. Probably should at some point.
Yeah, we're probably being irresponsible there.
Yeah. And then the Deadwood movie is coming to HBO. Now, this is a John Wick 3 situation for me in that I've seen roughly 2.5, maybe 3 episodes of Deadwood. It is the show. Like, most people have that show, right, that you've really tried to start and everyone says it's good and you just kind of can't get it rolling. That's that for me. So I don't know if the movie is the answer for me, that maybe I just need a 2-hour version of it and so on and so forth, or I'm going to be totally lost. I don't know which of those two it'll be.
Well, I think we'll find out if the Deadwood movie works as a standalone piece for somebody who doesn't really like Westerns. So if it does, it's definitely really good.
I really don't feel like I have that many genre things, except we just keep running into them.
Well, you have 2.5 in my mind.
Yeah, I'm out on superhero movies. And
you're out on Westerns, and then I'm giving you 1.5 for superhero plus John Wick.
I guess you could throw fantasy into the mix. I'm not big into fantasy.
Yeah, but a good enough fantasy story can get you in. We've seen
it. It's true.
That.
It's true. Sci-fi, I'll watch,
Yeah.
Westerns I get a tough time with. And naked period pieces. But even that, right? I went and watched The Favorite,
right,
I did it.
But I mean, I kind of agree with you on that. I think that's more about the pace and style of a lot of those movies than it is about the genre.
Yeah. I also just, it's harder for me to go to worlds where I'm not a person.
Right. I think that's been well established, and it's hard for me to say anything about.
All right. That's our homework. That's a lot of stuff.
I feel like we didn't even get to all the things we talked about, but it is a lot of stuff.
Yeah. We're going to be busy. You're also going to be a dad, I think, while that's going on. So
I'm dadding the whole time.
Do you have late night? You have late night TV windows now or whatever? Where the you gotta
kind
hold the kid?
But it's more a window for a thing I've seen before and don't need to pay attention to.
Gotcha.
It's hard because me and Griffin watched a little bit of She's Gotta Have It last night. And frankly, I don't feel like it was my best watching of that show.
I'll tell you, Schitt's Creek is kind of my go-to now for when I want to watch something but don't want to pay strenuous attention to it.
Yep. You know what I've also been doing? I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, is I am starting at the beginning of Top Chef. So watching season 1 San Francisco right now. And that I can just have, because if I miss a little, I don't miss much. But Griffin, he's kind of an attention monger, so he demands your attention. Yeah, it's he's constantly wanting to eat and make funny noises, and you just stare at him, and all of a sudden you miss 5 minutes. So it's not great for new IP.
but we got your old IP. I would say if you could find a way to watch old challenges, you got to let me know about that. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I will be pursuing that for sure.
All right. And on that note, I think we should get the hell out of here and go back to our lives.
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.